This is Ron Real Entrepreneurship, the show that brings the no-nonsense truth of what is required to start, grow, and scale your business. I am your host, Susan Sly. Well, hey, what is up, Ron Real Entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing day. I know my guest is having an amazing day. He was up since 5 a.m. He's worked out. He's been in the sauna. He's crushing it already. And, you know, in addition to everything I'm going to say about this particular co-founder, we've been very good friends for a long time, so I have no idea which direction the show is going to go in. For those of you who have listened to the show, Canada is not the number one listening audience in the world. Shame on you, Canada. It's actually United States. UK sometimes is number two, and then Canada is up there. But my guest today is also Canadian. So, you know, anytime I have a guest on that's from Canada, we always end with Canadian fast facts. So you'll see, you'll see where we get to. But my guest today is a corporate executive and co-founder with extensive experience working in both startup and larger operating businesses. He brings an educational background in marketing and human resource management, and he began his career working in management consulting before joining the McLean Group of Companies as vice president of business development, where he was responsible for revenue, which is very important, friends, profitability, and strategic growth. Over the past decade, he and his amazing wife, Nicole, have grown a substantial sales organization in the nutritional space, and that's actually where we met. And currently, he's serving as executive vice president and co-founder with BlockPal, and he's successfully guided the company through all of their private equity raises, M&A transactions, and has supported business development efforts, bringing many of the key strategic partnerships that have driven the company's rapid growth. My guest today is the one and only.
One and only.
Stuart. Well, you are the one and only. Nicole, your wife, thanks God you're the one and only. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. There's a lot of Robert Stewarts in the world. If you look up in the phone book, I think there's about 4 million of us, but no, thank you. And I'm just honored to be on the show. I mean, I know we've been trying to get this organized for a while and been chatting, but yeah, no, it's just great to connect and, you know, let's riff.
Absolutely. So Rob, one of the questions that, you know, this is a family show. So we have a lot of kids who listen, you're a dad, you know, there's this whole debate about are entrepreneurs born or made? And so how old were you when you started your first business and what was it?
Ooh, you know, this is actually a really good one. So, I don't believe I was born an entrepreneur at all. Like I have a lot of great traits. But, you know, I think that like my wife is truly more of an entrepreneur than me, and I've learned a ton of things from her. So, you know, starting our first business, really, I worked corporately. I was sort of hired to work for people. And, you know, I think I learned along that journey that it was fantastic. You got to see these, you know, risk takers, you know, highly successful multimillionaires, or, you know, the McLean family were almost billionaires. But, you know, for me, it was a learning of like, you know, I could only get paid so much, right? So, you know, they love my skill set. And a lot of the old guard, they didn't want to necessarily give you skin in the game, right? So they love to, you know, obviously leverage you, pay you a beautiful salary, bonuses, and all that. But, you know, you weren't, you know, necessarily getting the upside, right? And so I came into entrepreneurship with my wife through that nutritional business, and watching her operate in that field, it was, you know, I think it was pretty humbling actually to see, because, you know, I could always walk in with a title, you know, making good money, you know, behind a backing of a, you know, multi-million dollar company, and to start something, you know, completely from scratch is hard. And so what I've learned from her, and, you know, what I try to, you know, bring to every day is I don't try to get too high or too low. I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we get, you know, really excited. And it's like, yeah, I'm having a great day and I'm ready to go. But, you know, oftentimes it could be a tough day. Right. And so it's sort of like just not getting too up or too down. I think that's really, really important. And what I also have learned from her and just watching other successful entrepreneurs is that consistent action. Right. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, they don't know what to do. So they have a great idea, right. Or they're comfortable focusing in, you know, that one part of the business. And for me, what I really try to do is I just try to like action those top three things every day. And I just like to move things forward. And I think that applies for no matter what business you're in. It doesn't matter what venture. It's like, you know, what are your top priorities? And just taking that daily consistent action is what's going to move things forward. So, you know, as an entrepreneur, I think it is something that's learned. You know, I have some great, you know, skill sets, but like as sort of a, you know, executive co-founder, team member, you know, we need a team, right? It's difficult to do it by yourself. You know, you got to know what your strengths are. And, you know, I've learned to focus on those. And then, you know, it's just having great people around you, right? So, but yeah, I mean, I respect entrepreneurs, man. Like, you know, the ones that are born and have that risk taker mentality and are willing to fly close to the sun. You know, I love it. But, you know, something that I, you know, I'm learning as I go. So.
Well, and entrepreneurs, it's, I think there's a range of risk, right? So the entrepreneurs willing to take the most risk who are successful at it, because 90% mm-hmm. of all startups fail. And here's an interesting statistic, 90% of all first-time founders fail, but 90% of the second opportunities always succeed. Mm-hmm. And so it's that, you know, that willingness to take the risk and do it over and over again. But the entrepreneurs I know who are willing to take the most risk surround themselves with people like yourself who understand cash flow and balance sheets and de-risking the risk, so to speak. So let's go back to, you know, 2017, and you and I, oh my gosh, I don't even know how long we've known each other, mm-hmm. like a very, very, like 15 years, I don't know, mm-hmm. a long time, 18 years, I don't know. So in 2017, Block Pal starts, Radius starts, and you and I both go through this career pivot to suddenly say, okay, we're co-founding tech companies, and Block Pal is a company that is in the fintech space. There's AI enablement. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, you can see on my website, I'm an investor in Block Pal. And I think my first question for you is, what was the hardest part about pivoting? Because you had in your previous life, there was like, oh, we feel like going to the Bahamas, we go to the Bahamas, or we do whatever we want. And then suddenly now you're in a job, kind of speaking, but you have skin in the game, equity. Like, what was the hardest part of pivoting for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there was some angst in my life. You know, I felt a little bit like, you feel comfortable, right? And you also just feel like you're missing something. And, you know, I it was funny. I don't have much hair anymore, but I would go see my hairdresser and she cut my hair. And I think when I finally told her I was going to jump into Block Pal, she laughed because she said, well, you've been talking about doing something for like 3 years, right? So like, I think I was telling the universe I wanted to pivot, and I really felt like I could, you know, I needed a new challenge. I felt like I had, you know, a lot of skills that I developed, you know, corporately. And again, right, when you sort of ride a business, like, you know, our nutrition business was great. It was a beautiful residual income. It still is, right? You know, but you know, we just weren't putting that gas pedal down anymore. So to do it, it was a little bit scary. And again, my wife, Nicole, was the one that really, really pushed me. I think she saw what was sort of coming together. Like, she, you know, she's always one that kind of sees it first. And then I kind of see it after. But, you know, when we reconnected with Nick Nelios, who's, you know, CEO, founder of Block Pal, known him for 30 some odd years, incredible guy. And as you know, entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, you know, literally, you know, had a company that was, you know, exploding the dot-com times, and then was humbled, right? And then started another one and was like wildly successful, like you said, right? First ones sometimes don't succeed. And then just seeing what he wanted to create and just that vision, and being at that age where we just felt like, you know, we had the wisdom, you know, we've sort of gone through the ups and downs and the ego and all that. And we really wanted to create something special, right? And so, you know, Nicole really bought into the vision of what he was creating with this company, Block Pal. And, you know, we really wanted to like empower and, you know, unlock and provide access to financial services to people that don't usually have that access, right? And, you know, I mean, obviously banking is transforming, you know, right in front of our eyes right now. It's a wild time, but this has been kind of happening for a while, right? And, so it's just been exciting to be a part of this growth, and it's been rapid growth. You know, it's grown really quickly. I mean, at the beginning, when we first dove in, actually, we had a different vision for the company. And, you know, I guess one of the things we've learned is you got to adapt And, you know, we kind of adapted, you know, based on what was happening in the market. And we got fortunate, you know, based on our network and, you know, our shareholder group. Again, like I think for you know, all you sort of founders, co-founders, people that want to start a business, like you got to go out and really find strategic investors and not just people that want to give you money, but people that really support you, right? They want to see the business grow. And so lucky enough, like through the world that Susan and I come from, we, you know, we know a lot of people and we know a lot of great people. And so they happily invested, but not only invested, they wanted to make connections. They like genuinely wanted to open up their network. And that's really how life works. And so that's how, you know, my opportunities in Mexico, opening up that market happened was through a guy that I met 15 years earlier who was looking for his first break in marketing and ended up, you know, building a huge business. And he was the one that connected us there. And then in India, you know, which has been just an incredible market for us, similar, right? So, you know, it's been an interesting journey, like diving into this, but just trusting the process. And again, like I was saying earlier, like I used to get really up and down, and I've just realized you just got to even keel and you just got to keep on pushing through, right? No matter what's happening in the market, right? And I don't mean to keep on rambling, but like, you know, the market's been hard, right? It's been a hard year last year for a lot of companies. And, you know, it's, you know, how do you, you know, ride the storm, ride through the storm? And, you know, the strong ones survive, right? And so anyways, it's been a crazy 3 years. And, you know, we're not where we want to be, but, you know, I'm just blessed to be challenged, right? To even dive into this, so.
Well, and I love what you said, you know, that your hairdresser is like, okay, yeah. You know, like you've been talking about this for a while. Like there are so many people listening right now who have been thinking about pivoting and, mm-hmm. you know, it's not, the myth is that you just jump in and do it. You know, like Elon Musk was thinking about buying Twitter long before he declared he was going to buy Twitter. It's just you're thinking about it. You're ruminating on it, but that anxiety that comes with the actual pivot. And to your point, we both know a lot of people who are incredibly supportive and mm-hmm. amazing. And then there are also people who probably didn't get it. Could you think back to someone maybe, and you don't, obviously, please don't name any names, but like I was listening to Montel Jordan, who actually this is how we do it guy is actually a pastor now. And he was talking about how the people who support us to one level, because it's convenient, are not always the people who support us, because when we shift who we're being, it no longer fits their agenda. Right. So can you think back to maybe lack of support that kind of stung?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it happens all the time. You know, I feel that, like, you know, I come from the right place, and I think most entrepreneurs do, right? And as long as you're staying connected to that real vision of what you're creating, you know, again, it's being detached from that result. And that's something, you know, I've learned over the years. Again, it's, you know, watching some great entrepreneurs, but it's like, sometimes it isn't for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people like it to fuel them, like, you know, sure, the ego, like if someone says, you know what, you're never going to make it, this is garbage. And we've had that. I've been in meetings sitting with guys that were, you know, egomaniacs, you know, basically laughing at us, right? And sure, like, as, you know, competitive people, you want to prove them wrong. But I think it's just a waste of energy, right? There's just too much happening right now. And there's just too much opportunity, too many great people that want to support you. You got to let it go, right? It's like, you know, it's sort of like put your heart out there. But if it's not the right timing and someone wants to crap on you, every entrepreneur understands that. That's been successful, right, Susan? And, you know, I mean, I think the most successful people that sit around a table, they never talk about all the money they made and all the successes. They talk about all the failures, right? And the pain, right? But anyways, I mean, I think there's nothing that stands out. I think it's just something I've learned to deal with and move through. Right.
The no's are, since this is raw and real entrepreneurship, the no's, like I've definitely had some wall kicking moments, but then I'll step back and go, I feel sorry for people who aren't investing. Right. Like yeah. I feel, oh, I, for the, you know, the VC who's like, oh, this isn't a good fit, or you don't, you're too big, or you're too small, or you don't, you know, like whatever. And you're checking boxes, and you think about the founder of Canva, and she was rejected by 200 VCs. And then my friend Kartik, who was on the show, was rejected by 75 VCs before he got his B round. Right. And it's like, you know, you think about that and you do have to have this resilience. So how do you handle those wall kicking moments? Like, what is your, since it's raw and real entrepreneurship, say what?
So
but how, like, how do you handle it?
So I'm, again, I'm a little bit more emotional, right? Like I am, I have highs and lows. And so like, so Nick Melius, again, founder of Block Pal, he is so incredible. Like, you know, and someone I heard when I've known him for 30 years, one of his colleagues years ago said, they called him the cockroach. I said, oh, that's a terrible, what do you mean cockroach? He goes, no, I don't mean that in that way. He meant if there's nuclear holocaust, like the cockroach still lives. Like he just keeps on moving forward. Like nothing kind of stops him from moving the business forward. And I was like, wow, like so true, right? Like, cause again, it's not that, you know, the good times are easy. It's like, how do you get through the hard times? And so for me, you know, I just try to reconnect back. And I let go, right? It's like, let go. It's not about me, right? I just say a mantra to myself, whatever it is, right? You know, and it's just letting it go to the universe. And again, you know, there's so many great people that support you. That's all you need, right? So these VCs and these analysts, like, they, you know, like, I'm not a big fan. I mean, we need them. And I love you guys, whoever's watching. But, you know, it's just their job, right? They just see all these, it's like they're looking at a resume and they're trying to, you know, just tell you, you know, tell, you know, describe how, you know, this person's not a fit without even meeting them or really even giving it the time, right? So, you know, it's grain of salt, right? And you only need one, right? Let's be honest, like you need one big VC to support you or one big high net worth investor or whatever that looks like, the investment bank. So you don't need everybody, right? To, you just need a couple. And that's, I mean, that's the typical story of these unicorns or any successful business, right? So,
absolutely. And that I, you know, I think about all the pitches that I've done and you just get better and better and better. And at the end of the day, you invest it, you've heard this, but you invest in the team more than anything. And I know, like, even as an investor, when we were talking about BlockPal, I'm like, oh, it's Rob. He's gonna, like, he's that guy that loses everything, is on a street corner in Vancouver, and by that night has cash in his pocket, a roof over his head, and a belly full of food. And like, because that's the, you bet on the team. And so I, you know, even as an investor myself, and what I look for is that resilience. Was anyone a professional athlete? Because having been one, there's a lot of resilience. Like, what have they done in entrepreneurship before? And just knowing, you know, what you've done, what you and Nicole have done, it was like, oh, that's a no-brainer. So let's talk about BlockPal, because here we are, you know, 6 years later, the company, and it has transformed for a variety of reasons. But for a person listening who has no clue what BlockPal is, tell everyone all over the world, like, what is BlockPal and what does it do?
Yeah, so what so BlockPal's really sort of evolved over the years. So like how it actually founded was, so our Nick Melios, founder, CEO of BlockPal, was in the gaming space for a number of years, and they became, you know, real experts at back office management, you know, cybersecurity, KYC, like they were just masters of that. And they did extremely well, but they were in this space where, A, they didn't love it, right? It was a very highly competitive space. It was you know, unregulated in a lot of ways, right? Which they didn't enjoy. You're at the whim of what's happening in different countries. And, you know, but through that time, they built this beautiful platform, right? And they were like, we want to do more, right? We think we can serve more. We think we can take this to another level, another market. And that's where, you know, he was really looking at fintech, right? And they weren't sure like how that was going to look and what market they were going to play in, but they knew some fundamentals of what they really wanted to do. And one was obviously like really find a way to provide access to relevant financial services to people that don't have it. So right now, I think in the world, there's like 1.4 billion people on planet Earth that are unbanked still, right? literally have no access to banking. And I don't know how many are unbanked. I assume it's even, you know, so I say underbanked. I don't even know if it's, you know, double that. But, you know, with that, there's still everyone having mobile phones, right? We knew that, you know, the internet was now, you know, covering almost the entire planet Earth. So banking was going to transform, right? And a lot of these people at the same time don't trust banks, right? Like we grew up, you know, we're living in North America or Europe in these first world countries. We're used to just having banks you can go to. And even us, we don't go to it a lot. We do digital banking. So, you know, we knew there was an opportunity. And then with BlockPal, it was always focusing on, instead of being like, you know, business to customer, we were like, really wanted to do the B2B thing again, business to business. And we really wanted to like own that whole end-to-end solution, right? So, you know, it was really important. It's hard sometimes. I mean, of course you partner with the big guys, but like we wanted to have control of our own destiny. And so as this thing evolved, we got involved in Mexico and partnered with a group there that had over 60,000 retail locations where they were doing recharge for, you know, their cell phones and bill payments. And that's where it all started. We started building a sort of a retailer banking app, right? And really that banking app is where they can go and do all their banking services, relevant banking services they need at their corner store where they buy their milk and eggs, right? They trust the store owner more than they trust the bank. Mm-hmm. And so it was a sort of aha moment. And then when India sort of appeared by, again, just through network and destiny, a lot of times, right? We found a good partner there. And now we have over about 150,000 locations. We've done well over $2 billion in transactions. We're doing about $750 million a month in transaction volume. We're really growing. And it's just, again, about providing these sort of relevant banking services. So we have about 20 different banking services. People can come in and deposit money at the retailer, withdraw. They can send money. They can, they can pay for their insurance, you name it. They can get microloans, investment accounts. So it's been a really rewarding, you know, hard process in a lot of ways, but it's been incredible to see that momentum of growth, right? And so, you know, really we're becoming a real digital banking network, right? So we're really, we can't say we're a bank, we're not a bank yet, but we're obviously playing, you know, fully regulatory, looking at all our licenses, but we're really just that end mile between the bank and that customer. And so, you know, the world is so vast. There's just so much opportunity. And we just are fortunate to be in India and Mexico right now, but we've been seeding projects in Nigeria. We've been looking at, you know, Lebanon, Middle East, Vietnam. There's just lots of opportunities, but we're just kind of, slowly just making sure we do it right. You know, it's like really seeding the partner, seeding the project, you know, doing it the right way instead of just racing. But, and again, you need money, right, to do these things. So,
definitely do.
Yeah. And that's where the challenge. And I mean, I think that's funny. You know, I've always heard business school, I never seen it before, but like we had such rapid growth. It was like, you know, we had to keep the fun because, you know, again, we were growing and we're not profitable yet. You know, we're going to be to positive EBITDA profitable by the end of the year. That's really our target. And the markets have changed where they really, you know, they're demanding that, right? Where for a while it was about growth. And so, you know, we've had to be smart and figure out how we're going to do these things. But yeah, we were growing so quickly that, you know, it's like you have the Ferrari and we have the Ferrari and we had the GPS, we knew where we were going, but we just needed more gas, right? And so, you know, that's the constant, you know, struggle as the entrepreneur, right? So you either got lots of gas and you're trying to fix the Ferrari, right? Or you may have the gas in the Ferrari and you still don't quite have the right business plan to get to where you want to go, right? So it's just getting all that together. And so yeah, BlockPal right now, I think we're constantly growing. You know, we're again, being strategic about where we're growing. And I guess the last one, which is really great part of our project. So we have India, we have Mexico, and in Canada, we're partnered with a group called One Feather. And they're an Indigenous First Nations group in Canada. Incredible group. They do a lot of like governance and voting for different bands and nations. But we're going to be now distributing, helping distribute some of the money that they send out, the federal government will send out, or, you know, some of the bands will distribute cash. And we're just giving them, again, it's a relevant way, because a lot of them don't have the same access to banking, right? Depending on the rural locations, where they're living, the fees they're paying. So we've been working on this for a couple of years with this group, and we're very close, partnering with the federal government now, and really excited to see that sort of launch as well. So
that's so yeah, awesome. And yeah. And for those people like who are, you know, listening, and you might think about Canada being so cosmopolitan, but there's a massive population that lives in areas where there, even if there was a bank at some point, those banks are closing up their locations. And so digital banking and having access to digital banking is massive. And so, I mean, I love the vision of BlockPal, and you and I have been having some conversation I won't disclose just about like so many opportunities to really impact lives and to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So you're in fundraising mode and you have a company to co-run. A lot of people, one of my mentors said to me, Rob, last week, he's like, Susan, you're co-CEO of the company, you know, in Radius, we have 100 team members globally. So you're co-CEO of the company, you're running the company, and you're raising money. He's like, who's helping you make sure that the VCs stay interested and you're seeding them the information and keeping them excited? He's like, because that's a full-time job. I'm like, oh, it's me. And he's like, so you're working 60 hours on top of your 70 hours. I'm like, basically, yeah, right. It is a lot. There's no question. So while you're going through the fundraising and the global expansion, what keeps you up at night?
You know, I think what keeps us up at night, or keeps me up at night, is, again, you know, you can't control the global markets, right? And, you know, a lot of it, again, is, you know, it's very macro, right? In terms of even some of these VCs and investment banks are looking at the world, right? And so, you know, for us, I mean, ultimately, to fulfill the vision we have as a company, you know, we need to secure, though, some larger funding, and we're getting there, right? We were there almost last year, and then we pulled out jointly because of the, you know, Ukraine was happening, the markets were crumbling, and we didn't want to go public at the wrong time, right? At the end of the day, like, you know, I like, what keeps me up at night is I care so much about our shareholder base, and I want to make sure that we have a return on investment, and everyone's happy, that, you know, that's what, I guess that's what sometimes keeps me up at night. But at the same time, I know that if we continue to do the work, and we continue to, again, balance growing the business, maintaining the business, and getting out there and casting the vision, we'll find a partner. And, you know, we're close. We're close. And in the meantime, we've had incredible high net worth investors that have been coming in and see our vision and see that we're really undervalued, and they see, you know, obviously the opportunity to see a nice ROI, but be involved in a project that they can get behind too, right? That they can see the vision around. So, so that's what, I guess, what keeps me up at night, but it's also what fuels me, right? Like, you know, I appreciate when you said that, you know, you believed in me, and when you invest in something, I'm the same way. I invest in a team, right? Like, I sort of get what they're doing, but I'm like, number one, you know, I look at the group. And so our group is just, you know, we're just not going to stop, right? Like, you know, we're going to make it work. And I think that's the entrepreneur spirit, right? You know, you're not like, you're not pushing something that's not going to work, but like, we know everything's there in place, and we're just continuing to move. And I think it's made us stronger. Like, I think last year, seeing the markets really get hit has been the best thing ever for our company, even though after, like, we cry about it, but it made us leaner, made us stronger. It just made us more clear in the vision. We had to sort of tighten up on areas. Like, oftentimes you focus on areas that aren't profitable, but your ego gets in the way, and everyone. So we were able to kind of clean up, and we just had this really beautiful foundation for a company ready to really take that next step. So
I love what you said about being undervalued, because one of our shared mentors, Jim Cooper, has always said, you know, grow big quietly. And I remember sitting in a board meeting for Radius and saying, you know, let's grow big quietly. And then this year, Rob, when we went to National Retail Federation, so we had the only booth, the world's largest retail show, that did live AI. And then suddenly we were not quiet anymore. And we had like all these major retailers, and we still have them reaching out to us. And there's this point where, you know, a company goes through, it's like, that's what you dream of. But at the same time, it comes with a whole bunch of different optics because different people are looking at you. And then, you know, there's investor expectations and all of those different things that it takes. And, you know, so it is a very, and to your point, it's a very interesting time to raise money you know, but I believe exactly what you said, the right investors are out there. So can you find them? It's like anything. And so, yeah, I totally hear you. So this comes to the point in the show where we're going to have some Canadian fun.
Okay, cool. I like Canadian fun.
Okay. So, so my first question is, who shaved the eyebrow?
Oh, geez. It's a Canadian, an English Canadian guy who lives in Kelowna, and I don't want to say any more, but, and he's never admitted it. He actually tried to, throw somebody else under the bus. And then, when he left the next day to Australia, you know, I think he sort of, you know, I mean, it wasn't hard to figure out who it was, but yeah, I'm not going to drop his name because I don't want anyone else to get it.
No. And you know, this is the whole thing. Like I am ridiculously nervous about partying with you all where there's like a possibility that I'll wake up with part of my eyebrow missing. That's an inside story. Okay. So switching gears.
Inside story. Yes.
Yes. Favorite Canadian rock band or singer of all time?
Ooh, good one. I don't know. I mean, you always would say the Tragically Hip. I've always been a huge fan, but you know, I mean, there's so much good music. I don't know. I mean, you know what? Bryan Adams was so when I was living in West Van recently, Bryan Adams was our neighbor at the time, and Michael Bublé lived across the street. So not that I'm a huge Michael Bublé fan, but amazing guy. And so I'd say Bryan Adams as well.
Every year we like the girls and I start in November with Michael Bublé's Christmas and it drives Chris crazy. Yeah. And I'm like, he's Canadian. We have to have like this, you know, it's tradition and it's important. And the Hip is, in my opinion, the right answer because obviously I'm biased there. Okay. Favorite Canadian food and why?
Good question. Okay. So let me think about that. Like, I mean, you know, everyone says poutine. I don't like love poutine. I'll eat it, right? Like,
it was really good in Montreal when we had it that night.
Yeah, it was.
We were laughing so hard. I can't even remember that song we made up of Dear Lord. Geez.
Yeah, that was good.
I have a video of that though.
I don't, you know, it's funny. I don't really have like a favorite Canadian food, honestly. Like, I like to eat everything. I don't know what's really. I mean, you tell me what's your, like, cause you're living in the US, I'm in Canada. So I sometimes forget. So what's your favorite, like chocolate? You miss a candy, like chocolate, or do you miss a?
I don't eat sugar, but I would say a good poutine. 100%.
Yeah, I agree.
And cheese curds, like I can't, ooh. I don't do really well with dairy, but like if you have poutine, you have the cheese curds, you have the French fries and the gravy, like,
Oh yeah, no. I mean, yeah, no, I think it's so gourmet now, right? It's like, yeah, you gotta go like gourmet Montreal, gotta find it. Yeah, I like it.
Okay, final question. What typical Canadian stereotype that foreigners have about Canada do you wish was really, really true?
Oh yeah. I think it is sort of true, but people always say how nice we are, right? We're just the nicest people. And, you know, obviously doing global business, like, you know, it's been a real learning for me for the last years of, you know, dealing with, you know, Mexican business compared to like India, and everyone has a different way of doing things. And I think with like, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I think it's Canadian, is we kind of want to cut through the crap. Like, I don't want to play poker. And sometimes we are doing that, we give up a little bit, right? But we just want to get down to it because we're nice people that want to do a win-win deal, right? And so, but you know, I don't know how nice we are. I think we're a little passive aggressive. And you know, there's, you know, everyone's, you know, like in US people, oh, you know, I mean, the Americans love us. But you know, we're like that little brother, probably your sister, right? That they don't really pay too much attention to. And we're not always nice and cute, but you know, but fine, you know, we'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're like Ryan Reynolds, you know, like yeah, Ryan yeah. Reynolds can do a rom-com and then, yeah. you know, he can be Deadpool.
Yeah. 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 There you go. I love it. That's perfect. I love it. That's hilarious. No, that's great.
Well, Rob, thank you again so much for being here. And if you're an investor or you are someone who has a, you know, massive amount of experience in taking companies into foreign markets, go to blockpal.com and check it out. And Rob, I know I just had Bernadette Butler on the show, another amazing Vancouver entrepreneur, and we're all supposed to go out for martinis and Timbits. So we'll have to have video of that. Yeah, I don't know if I'll have the Timbit, but the martini, like a
martini, I'll do too. I'll do that as well. I'm not a Timbit person, but you know, I'll maybe have one after a martini. I don't know, but that sounds great. I'm looking forward to meeting her. And again, it's been great to be on the show, and I appreciate, you know, I think everyone appreciates what you're doing here. This is impactful for people, and just keep doing what you're doing. So appreciate your support.
Well, thanks, Rob. All right, everyone. With that, if you haven't left a 5-star review, get your butt over there and leave us a 5-star review. If you're going to leave a nasty review, just don't leave one. I'm sure your mother told you if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it. And that's the way I feel. And if you would like to share the show, tag Rob and I. We love that on social. And all of Rob's contact information and BlockPal's information is in the show notes. So check it out on SusanSly.com. With that, God bless. Go rock your day. And I will see you in the next episode.
Hey, this is Susan, and thanks so much for listening to this episode on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. If this episode or any episode has been helpful to you, you've gotten at least one solid tip from myself or my guests, I would love it if you would leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. After you leave your review, go ahead and email reviews@susansly.com. Let us know where you left the review. And if I read your review on air, you could get a $50 Amazon gift card, and we would so appreciate it because reviews do help boost the show and get this message all over the world. If you're interested in any of the resources we discussed on the show, go to SusanSly.com. That's where all the show notes live. And with that, go out there, rock your day, God bless, and I will see you in the next episode. Are you currently an employee looking to start your own business? Maybe you've been thinking about it for a while and you're just not sure where to start. Well, my course, Employee to Entrepreneur, combines my decades of experience as an entrepreneur with proven methods, techniques, and skills to help you take that leap and start your own business. This course is self-paced, learn on demand, and comes with an incredible workbook. And that will allow you to go through this content piece by piece by piece, absorb it, take action, and then go on to the next module. So check out my course on SusanSly.com, Employee to Entrepreneur.